Melbourne becomes the centre of the sporting world as the best tennis players on the planet converge on Australia's sporting capital.
Serves up the middle and finishes with an ace, as authoritative as you could ask for.
The biggest points from the biggest matches live from Rod Laver Arena and around Melbourne Park.
Back up the line by Djokovic, puts in the drop shot, Karatsev brings Joker four and he couldn't get to it. What a point!
Across Australia and New Zealand, on air and through the app.
Oh, you beauty, you little beauty.
This is the 2022 Australian Open on SEN.
Thanks to the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
It's as silent as the critics.
Find out more at kia.com/au.
I'm just being me. That's all I can be. That's all I can ask of myself. And it's about going out there and trying to do the best I can each and every match. I know I say it a lot, but regardless of the number next to my name, that doesn't change the way we approach it. And it feels like an eternity since I've played here at home. So it's, you know, it's exciting going into it. And I'm very fortunate and grateful that I'm in the draw and I've got a chance like everyone else.
Barty goes out wide. Beautifully done. That is a big clutch serve when she netted it.
Now it's Barty who's in control. She's got a smash. Pegula throws up another lob. It's a smash for Barty, and she puts this one away emphatically. The ideal start for Barty. The short slice from Ash is deadly. She is surgical. She has cut Pegula to pieces.
There's not many girls out there that hit a slice backhand. I think the fact that they don't see it that often and then have to come up again, it's actually quite funny when you see who Ash has to play and then you see him out there practicing someone hitting a slice backhand to him. It's probably a bit late the day before to try and get that right. But if you haven't practiced it enough now, you're probably not going to get that right.
Switch out the lights. This party is over, I'm telling you.
1 hour and 3 minutes. The world number one is a step closer to an Australian Open final. Down the tee, backhand response just over the net. There's the forehand into the open court, and Barty's got to the final. That's what we ordered, and that's what she's delivered.
To be in the finals weekend of your home Grand Slam is what a lot of Aussie players dream of. It's going to be an incredible experience come Saturday. I can't wait to go there and enjoy it.
It's just about time for you to start the process to get ready. You have one more to go. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Australia, are you ready?
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Rod Laver Arena. I've got to say, I've just got a touch of the butterflies hearing that intro. It's been nice and calm for the last 13 days, and here we are on the cusp of something extremely special on Rod Laver Arena tonight. Ash Barty trying to become the first Australian Open champion for 44 years. It was Mark Edmondson on the men's side, 1976. Chris O'Neill is going to join us in just a moment in 1978. It's been a drought that we desperately want broken on the singles front tonight. I can tell you the atmosphere is really building. We've just come off an epic junior boys final where one of the participants had to be wheeled out on a wheelchair that went 3 and 3/4 hours that we thought might have gone for another hour and really pushed the night back, but that's been concluded. And now we await the women's final tonight. Ash Barty, of course, the world number one up against the 27th seed from the United States, Danielle Collins, who's only got eyes for one prize tonight, and that's to lift the Daphne Akhurst trophy as well. She doesn't mind being the villain. She won't worry about the crowd not being in her corner because this, realistically, is maybe the one window she will have to win a Grand Slam trophy. You feel like Ash Barty, if she doesn't win tonight, is going to win a few more. But hand on my heart, we want to see her absolutely win tonight. It's been 6 rounds of total dominance. Has not dropped a set. Cirenko, Bonzetti, Georgie, Anna Samova, Pegula, Keys. It's been clinical. Every match around the hour mark. For Danielle Collins, she got through the first 2 rounds quite comfortably. And then rounds 3 and 4 went the journey in the heat against Clara Towson and Elise Mertens. And then, of course, in the quarterfinal, she dispensed of Elise Cornet. And in the semi-final, she was clinical. She went to work with her beautiful cross-court backhand to dispense of Iga Swiatek. So different paths to the final, but Collins is certainly ready. We know Ash Barty is ready. And this house tonight Rod Laver's house, who will be in the front row, is going to be absolutely packed to capacity. So we look forward to the build-up over the next hour and a half. We'll have a chat to Lou Pleming, who's been a big part of our team, to give us some real analysis in the next half hour or so. And after seven tonight, we're going to be joined by the 2011 US Open champion, 2010 French Open finalist. The resume goes on and on. We'll get into that a little bit later on with Sam Stoser. So it's going to be magnificent to have Sam alongside me to call all the action, someone that knows Ash Barty extremely well. But one name that I walk past every day to get down to our little bunker here is Chris O'Neill, 1978 Australian Open champion. It's quite an extraordinary story of how she actually did it. She's come down from Port Macquarie, and we're lucky enough for her to join us right here in the box. Chris, welcome to you. I've got to say, how good is this view?
Amazing. Thank you, Brett, for having me here, and to everyone for having me here. This is, yeah, incredible. Just so close to the players, and obviously different perspective on speed, on all of it. It's great.
Now, when we come down to this bunker, I've been coming down to this bunker for about 10 years, and, of course, we walk up into the corridor, all the Australian Open champions of the past, and you happen to be right at the door. So I've been walking past you for about a decade, so it's actually lovely to meet you in person.
Yes, you too.
Port Macquarie's home?
Port Macquarie's home. I've been up there for about 7 years. It was a lifestyle change to go there and sort of semi-retire.
I want to go back. I mean, 1978. I mean, you are a trivia question that everyone loves to answer, and some, you know, have sort of short memories, and they go, 1978, who did win back then? And then you go back through the records, Chris O'Neill. I imagine you would love to be able to, you know, hand the baton on at some point. It's a nice thing to have, absolutely, and that'll be never taken away. But to hand the baton over to someone like an Ash Barty would be, I imagine, a great feeling, just the way she carries herself. My understanding is you haven't met Ash, is that correct?
No, I haven't met her yet. I'd love to, and hope to do so. Yeah, look, I'm just really excited that we have an Aussie with such a great shot at, you know, breaking this drought.
Mm.
And, you know, particularly with somebody like Ash, who is a fantastic tennis player and also, you know, seemingly a wonderful person. So as much as I've enjoyed it and the fun I've had with it, I think I'm ready.
1978, Kooyong. Chris, I go to Kooyong quite a bit. I only live about 5 minutes down the road, and I'm lucky to have a membership at Kooyong. MC quite a few functions, go to lunch there, but I never went to the Australian Open at Kooyong. But take me back to 1978. You became the first unseeded woman to win the AO in the Open era, and then, of course, Serena did it, ranked, 81 in the world back in 2007. But take us back for those that weren't around then, and the 1978 Australian Open and how it all unfolded for you.
Well, it's completely different to today. There's not anything that's similar, really. As you just said, you know, different court surface, grass, which suited my game. I was pretty much a serve volleyer. And, look, it was unexpected for me. As you said, I was unseeded. And I had worked really hard in preparation. I'd come back early that year and spent a lot of time working hard in preparation. And I guess as the tournament went on, you know, I wasn't as surprised as in the beginning because I was feeling more confident.
Yep.
Very, very proud of it and actually really fortunate to have hung on to it for this long.
So you beat Betsy Nagelson on the day. Can you close your eyes and take back centre court Kooyong on that day? Just the atmosphere when you walked out, just the whole environment. What was it like?
Well, it was the first time that I'd played in a major final. So, indeed, it was. It was pretty breathtaking. But I managed to get through it correctly. So, yes, it was. As I said, I wasn't in a major final before, so it was brand new.
How much did it change your life being a Grand Slam champion?
Enabled me to, because we didn't earn a lot of money then, it enabled me to continue to travel and to continue to compete. And, Yes. It did give me a little bit of confidence. But look, apart from that, my life didn't change greatly.
And so post-playing, just take us through your involvement in tennis. Obviously, there was some coaching that you did along the way. So tennis, we call it the sport for life, Chris. So it tends to stay in the DNA, whether you go from player to coach or player, some go into commentary or some find a role in tennis because they just they love the sport that much.
Yeah. Well, it's now a hobby for me. I teach very little now, but I have, been in coaching for many years, probably 35 years. I love to teach. I love the fact that we were in a different game style and different everything, different racket technology, different, less top spin. And so that was my game that I learnt, but then I relearned how to teach the new game. And I love technique. I love pulling things to pieces and working on how to make change. And, I've met some particularly great kids over the years where, they haven't certainly become professionals, but they've learnt some fabulous life lessons and are really, solid human beings now, which makes me very proud.
Yeah, there's more to just the sporting results, isn't it? What sport can do for you, being in that environment. So you talk about technique. I imagine you love, like all of us, just watching Ash Barty play. It's a bit of a throwback to tennis in your era. Just when you're courtside sitting Ash, just take me through your own thoughts of her game.
Well, her variety, absolutely. I hear that she learnt her slice backhand from her first coach at a very young age, which, she's now using unbelievably offensively and, dismantling players' games. But so it is the variety. She would seem that she's done a lot of hard work on a serve because the serve is faster and the placement is better, and then she follows it up with her big forehand. But it all culminates with her attitude and to put it all together, to bring it all together, and I think that's what she does so well. She looks calm, she looks confident, she looks happy.
Yep.
So, look, I'm really hoping that, that will be the same tonight.
I imagine, like all of us, Chris, you would love her humility too, her sense of perspective. I mean, no one will ever know what anyone's feeling on the inside, but from the outside, she looks like she's just in a really, really good space. I mean, she comes out here tonight, and some would phrase it as, with a weight of expectation on her shoulders, but you'd never know it with Ash. She seems to have great perspective on all of that. It doesn't seem to be weighing on her the sense of occasion.
No, well, as you said, you never really know what's going on inside, but I think that with her team, I think she does a lot of work on that to give herself the ability to use her skills. And for a young person, I mean, she's only 25 years old, but very mature and very smart, obviously.
The juniors were out here earlier. You won the AO juniors in 1973. What are your recollections of that? Because often those who win the juniors do go on to have an impact in the pros.
Yeah, well, I think there's only a few players who've actually done that. Yes, I beat my best mate in the final of the juniors, a girl at that stage called Jenny Walker.
Yep.
I remember that pretty vividly on court two at outside, on court two at Kooyong. But again, different, just completely different, different era altogether.
It's evolved a lot, hasn't it? I mean, Billie Jean King and the ladies around her at the time who got the WTA Tour underway to now create all these opportunities and the earning possibilities for so many down the ecosystem. It's evolved into a truly professional game.
Absolutely. I mean, Billie Jean King was the pioneer for all of that. And then it's just progressed into, as it's expanded in terms of countries playing, the number of players that play in countries and the depth of field throughout. So the game's grown enormously, and obviously prize money's grown, so it brings people into the sport. But yeah, look, pretty tough to get out there and make a living out of it today.
It is, isn't it?
Yep.
Did you love, though, the one-on-one sort of gladiatorial nature of tennis as opposed to team sports? Did you play a combination of sports and then choose tennis? Was tennis always the sport for you because you loved that sort of one-on-one battle where it was you, just you out there and having to try and survive and problem solve and win?
Not so much that. I actually had quite a lot of success as a junior, and my dad loved it, and, you know, so that's how it started. Just in terms of being a singular sport, though, I actually probably had better results with doubles. So, look, I think I'd say I enjoyed doubles more. It's good to get a bit of help out there.
That's right. That's a good point, because we've seen the doubles put into a bigger spotlight at this year's Australian Open. So Kyrgios and Kokkinakis have certainly altered just the scheduling of the doubles draw. And, I mean, for mine, Chris, I would love to see the doubles become more prominent at the majors and around the world. I often think it's sort of the afterthought. You know, we're putting it after the singles all the time, whereas most people recreationally play doubles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic game. There's obviously a lot of finesse involved. And even mixed doubles, you know, presents another set of dynamics that I think are interesting.
Did you enjoy that back in the day when, I suppose, your era allowed you to play all three? I mean, the physicality sort of 40 years on, it, particularly for the men, it seems like it's so much harder now to be able to play singles, doubles, even entertain playing mixed. I mean, no one really does it these days.
No. And that's why I think there's become double specialists, people who just play and, you know, make a living out of doubles. And then, you know, certainly the top players, because of that physicality, they're not able to. Not if they're concentrating on their singles.
We're lucky enough to be joined by Chris O'Neill tonight, ahead of the women's final. Of course, the winner, the last Australian winner, male or female, back in 1978, of course, at the famous Kooyong Lawn Tennis Club, which is still the spiritual home of Australian tennis, still a very special place. When was the last time you got to Kooyong? Do you have a venture there when you sort of get down to Melbourne?
Probably about 10 years ago. They actually gave me a membership. It's a beautiful club, so you're in the right place there. So it was probably about 10 to 12 years ago. Yeah.
Okay, you'll have to come back because they've just done a massive redevelopment.
Oh, really? So,
one? Yeah, exactly. Well, they're putting more car parking because they've got that many members.
Wow.
They need to be able to fit in. And everyone wants to play at the same time. So, yeah, it's an incredible, incredible facility.
Yeah.
So when you look at this final tonight, I don't know how much you've watched of Danielle Collins. I mean, it's sort of very contrasting styles out there tonight. What do you think?
I'm hoping that Ash will be able to do the same. Obviously, Daniel Collins is a big hitter of the ball, flat, but what Ash has been able to do is diffuse that power, and with, you know, tactically with a slice backhand. So I think if she can do that again, I think it's a very hard game to play against because a lot of these players don't play like that. So, you know, they get out onto the court and they've got not only the number one player in the world who's confident, but they've got a game style that they're confronting that's completely different to the one that, you know, they've played up until the final. So, look, again, I'm hoping, I think, you know, I'm thinking that my money's on her, on Ash.
You feel like she can find a way. She problem solves so well and go to plan B, C,
absolutely,
and D.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you, when you were playing, what was your favourite shot that you loved to play? Because everyone's got a shot that would just feel probably better off the strings than any other shot.
Yeah, probably volley. I was a serve volley player.
Yep.
You know, I was obviously tall as a junior, so I was pushed into the net. But also we played on faster court, lower bouncing court surfaces. So, yeah, probably my volley was the more dangerous weapon.
I think we love seeing that style of tennis. We saw it on the men's side, big Maxine Cressy coming in all the time, Sam Groth in the latter part of his career. More of that, please.
Yeah, it's unusual, isn't it? Well, it's just good to have variety.
So so you're going to leave us now? It's the pre-match. I mean, do you feel any sort of nerves tonight, just the sense of occasion, or are you just going to sit back and relax and enjoy?
I get to carry. I'm doing the pre-match, so I get to pick up the trophy again and perhaps have it in my hands for one last time and carry it out on the court and be in that environment. So I'm very much looking forward to that, and to obviously watching Ash.
Well, we hopefully can add Ash Barty's name to the Daphne Akers Trophy tonight. Chris, really appreciate you coming in. Congratulations again. 1978, I was only 4 years of age at the time, so...
Go away.
I don't know I don't know how much I took in. Maybe Mum and Dad had it on at home, but yeah. I have gone back and watched some footage, and it's great to go down memory lane with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. What an absolute treat to have Chris O'Neill here in the bunker. She's going to be front and square in about an hour's time, lifting the Daphne Akers Trophy, putting it into the middle of Rod Laver Arena. So the crowd will be able to certainly acknowledge the last Australian Open champion, 22 years of age, back in 1978 at Kooyong. If anyone's got any memories of that, I'd love to hear from you. 0433 98 11 16. Were you at that final? Were you at Kooyong that particular year? Because I think 1977 they played two Australian Opens in 1 year. One was in January, one was December. But it is quite an extraordinary story. 111 in the world at the time, and became the first unseeded woman to win the Australian Open in the Open era, defeating Betsy Nagelson in the final in straight sets. And, of course, Serena went on 2007 to win, when she was ranked 81, had that tough period of injury. It didn't really reflect Serena's ranking, but it was a mighty if at the time, considering what she had been through. 0433 98 11 16. If you want to send some texts throughout the night, we can also stockpile any for Sam Stosur. She's going to be with us after 7 o'clock, of course. Magnificent to have Sam as part of our coverage tonight to give us some real insights into this matchup. Take us through point by point. She knows Ash Barty as well as anyone. And as I look out onto Rod Laver Arena at the moment, the two men who aren't getting, a lot of kudos, not much publicity of the All-Aussie doubles final coming up, which we're going to bring you later on. Jordan Kanellis and Mark Woodford will be courtside for that following the women's final. But Max Purcell and Matt Ebden right now are just having a nice hit. Nathan Healy, Max's coach, is out there. Sam Maxwell, who manages Matt Ebden, who doesn't well, he hits a pretty good tennis ball. Sam, he's out there as well. The calm before the storm here, before all the punters will be allowed in about about three quarters of an hour's time. But look, they're certainly the underdog. Well, they're certainly not maybe the punter's pick. But these two guys have played good doubles together. They've played more doubles on the circuit than Thanasi and Nick. So it's going to be a fascinating battle, and we're going to have an Aussie winner. So that's something that we can absolutely take to the bank a little bit later on. SEN's Australian Open coverage. It's brought to you by the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6 and McDonald's. Try the Aussie Angus Burger at Macca's today. So it's tennis all the way through tonight. I've got to say, sitting here now, having been in our little cocoon here for 14 weeks, watch Ash Barty go about her work. I mean, you pray now that she can put the icing on the cake. And we know that you've got to start from zero. It's not a given. Danielle Collins, we're going to hear from Danielle after the break. She is one hell of a competitor. And I'll tell you a little bit more about her story, because this is maybe her one window. But she's built herself, as Sam Stosur, we'll touch on this with Sam later, who wrote a great column in the Herald Sun today. You can play the game if you've earned your spot in the top 30 of women's tennis. And if we think back to when she was first here, 2019, and she was mature age, because she had come out of college tennis, won the NCAA title twice, she was such a mature player, feisty, great competitor, made a run to the semi-finals. We could not have picked her at all. So here she is three years later in a final. We'll come back after the break, have a listen to Danielle Collins. Lou Pleming has been a great part of our team across the last fortnight. She'll give us some insights as well. We're building up to Ash Barty and Danielle Collins, the women's final, right here, live on SEN tonight.
Park, this is the 2022 Australian Open, live on SEN.
Thanks to the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au.
Seeing positive energy, hearing people's voices, and that's something that I really thrive in, whether, you know, I have a full crowd going for me or whether I have a, you know, the opposite or somewhere in the middle. I really just love the energy, and I think that's what all professional athletes play for. So I think I'm just really excited to go out there and compete, and it was kind of relieving today when I saw Ash and Madison play, and it looked like there were more spectators in the crowd than, you know, a couple days before. So, yeah, just excited to go out there and do my best. I realized that, you know, there's going to be a lot of people supporting Ash, and it's all in good spirit.
So that is the voice of Danielle Collins in her first Grand Slam final. Quite extraordinary. If you ask me at the start of the tournament, that Danielle Collins was going to be in the final, we wouldn't have picked it. But there's always a storyline that develops at the first major of the year, for all four majors, really. And that's become the evenness of women's tennis. 0433981116. You can jump on and talk some tennis tonight. Would love to know your thoughts about this matchup, your thoughts ahead of the men's final coming up tomorrow, the All-Australian doubles final tonight. Let us know where you are, how you are going to be taking him, Ash Barty, tonight. 0433981116. But for Danielle Collins, 26 and 16 in the majors. I actually met second round at Roland Garros. I remember being there when Ash won back in 2019, and that was one of Barty's scalps on her way to winning her first ever major, 7-5, 6-1. Danielle has had a couple of matches, as I mentioned, that have really gone the distance this week, but she seems to have come out of both of those matches really well. I mean, Clara Towson, that was an incredible match. A young girl from Denmark, a former Australian Open junior winner here, who's no doubt a player that's going north in the rankings. That was 2 hours, 35 minutes out on court. And then the Elise Mertens battle was something else, 2 hours and 51 minutes. And somehow she's able to come out of those two matches and then get to work, and she reset beautifully physically to beat Cornet and Swiatek in really convincing style. So she has gone down the collegiate pathway, University of Virginia. She won the NCAA singles title twice. That was back in 2014 and 2016. She's currently without a full-time coach. She's got a pretty small team that have come on the road. You would have maybe heard some of her on-court interviews throughout the last fortnight, which she's talked about some of the health problems that she's had last year as well. But one thing she is, and certainly acknowledged by Ash Barty, acknowledged by Sam Stosur in her column in the Herald Sun today, she is just one hell of a competitor. I mean, certainly for Sam, she's met some big hitters throughout this tournament. Georgie, Anisimova, not so much Pegula, Madison Keys, who we expected probably to put up a far better display, Madison, in the semi-final. But Ash deals with those really well. Now, Collins doesn't have a lot of subtlety to her game, but she is striking the ball extremely well. I mean, that performance against Swiatek that we thought would probably go to three sets, absolutely dismantled a player who's going to be in and around the top 10 for some time, who plays an all-court game. She just could not get into that game at all. And the cross-court backhand, it was the forehand backhand up the line. Collins was just in the absolute zone that night. So when she walks out onto court tonight, it'll be the steely eyes, it'll be her player box that'll be supporting her, no one else, but she'll absolutely revel in that environment. So what she puts up tonight, we'll find out. I mean, we've got a fair indication from Ash Barty's matches, probably within the first, you know, 10 to 15 minutes of what sort of match we're looking at. And if Collins can just unsettle Barty a bit, then maybe we've got a real contest. And then how Ash might react if she does drop a set potentially for the first time in the tournament. I mean, I would go in tonight thinking that, feeling pretty confident that Ash is not going to do that. I don't think there will be the lapse. I think she'll be able to get it, certainly on her terms. But if Collins does play some real lights-out tennis and takes things away from Barty and doesn't allow her to use her strengths, how will then Ash respond? And maybe they've been waiting for this moment the entire tournament, her and Craig Tizer, and their planning. And the good part is Ash can go to other things to get the match back on her terms. And that's what we love. She's multidimensional. I think everyone describes her game the same way. It's just beautiful. It's got every shot in the book. She can turn up the aggression when she needs to, and she can play with that guile and the craft that just, you know, really sets her apart from her contemporaries. It puts the ball into really difficult areas that players don't like. They like rhythm. They like the ball to be in the hitting zone, and Ash doesn't always do that. So Danielle Collins, look, she has earned her spot. She's had 4 years being around the top 30. Last year won her first two WTA titles in Palermo and San Jose, and that was on the back of those health issues. And she's just an incredible competitor. And if you've got that as your DNA, then you're going to be in most matches that you play. And the last time they actually played was in Adelaide last year, and Danielle Collins did take the scalp of Ash Barty, but this is a Grand Slam, and there is just so much at stake. So we're certainly nervous, but I think we're confident of what Ash Barty has displayed across the first six matches. It's been 6-love, 6-1, 6-1, 6-1, 6-2, 6-3, 6-4, 6-3. Anisimova certainly tested her a little bit more. Pegula could not get into the match at all, 2 and love. And Madison Keys had a little period there in the third set when she was able to win some of the rallies off the ground. But Ash, once again, was just too good. 6-1, 6-3. We'll take a break. We're going to get some thoughts from Lou Plemming very shortly, who will drill down and analyse this a little bit further. Keep your thoughts coming through. 0433 98 11 16. Tony says on the text, Brett, Chris O'Neill, remember as it was like yesterday. I hope you enjoy that chat off the top. If you're just tuning in now and you've missed the Chris O'Neill interview, it'll be podcasted as well, so you can go back and have a listen to the 1978 Australian Open champion just going down that memory lane. We're building up to Barty and Collins. They're just closing the roof here. The fans are coming in, and it's going to be a great build-up, about an hour away from the Australian Open Women's Singles Final.
Melbourne Park, this is the 2022 Australian Open, live on SEN.
Thanks to the super-fast charging, all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au.
Putting up to the women's final, great to have you with us on SEN, right across the network, wherever you might be, across Australia, across New Zealand, across the world. I want to hear from you tonight. Brett Phillips in the chair. Sam Stose is going to join me in just under half an hour. We'll have a chat to Lou Plemming in just a moment, and then we'll welcome out Ash Barty and Danielle Collins, who will walk out on court just after 7:30 here in Melbourne. The boys, Maxi Purcelli, just coming right up to our window. He and Matt Ebden are just having a nice hit on RLA ahead of their big doubles final tonight against the 2Ks in Nick Kyrgios and also Thanasi Kokkinakis. So that is certainly something to look forward to. Lou Plemming has been outstanding with us across the fortnight with her expert analysis. And here we go, women's final. Louis, we're ready to go. Good evening to you.
Cracker. Thank you. Yeah, fantastic. Cannot wait for this, Brett. This is just going to be absolutely amazing for Australian tennis, for the whole Barty team. And we know it is big, it's growing, and we know how much, what her team means to her. So she's not doing it just for herself and not just for Australia, because she really is. I think she's handling herself extremely well, Brett. It's amazing. I mean, there is a lot of weight on her shoulders, and obviously she wants this one more than any of them.
Yeah, she does, Lou. Yeah, she absolutely does. And she's up against a player who, and whether it's fair or unfair, but I mean, sometimes in tennis you might only get one window to win a major. Here's Danielle Collins, who's a bit older, who's matured a little bit later. I mean, she's been playing tennis like everyone who goes into pro tennis. You start when you're a little tacker, when you first pick up the racket, and you know, she might have thought in her heart of hearts that she may never make a Grand Slam final in her career. I mean, you have that belief and the hope and the dreams, so. So much for her to play for tonight.
Absolutely. About 3 years ago, I watched the first round of Danielle Collins and Petra Kvitova. And Danielle lost that match, and she was out the back and she was bawling. It's one of the best matches I had seen for the first match of a year. It was one of those, you were living on the edge for every point. And I went up to Danielle Collins after the match and I just said, you know what, you keep playing like that, you're going to be playing some great tennis and you're going to be winning big events. And she looked at me and she just said, well, thank you, because I didn't know her and I just commentated her match. And I just said, this girl's got so much fire in her belly. I think the outstanding thing for Danielle is that she is extremely hungry. And, you know, right now, as much as people can say, she's got no pressure on her shoulders because she's not even expected to be here at the final. But trust me, the minute you walk down the walk of champions and you walk onto Rod Laver Arena, she's going to be shaking for a little bit. There's no question about it. This is huge. But the one thing she is going to do is just put in her big-time game tennis. And she won't take the foot off the pedal. We saw that the other night when she played Iga. She's been so impressive all tournament. Really, it's pretty incredible that she's in the final.
So Barty's got the 3-1 head-to-head. Barty beat her in Adelaide last year. Yep. But really it's now about the current and where both players are at. And Sam will join us shortly, as I've mentioned. And she's wrote a really good column in her Herald Sun today. I mean, Collins, you don't get to, you know, the top 30 where she's sort of been, high as 23 in the world, if you can't play the game. So she's a worthy opponent. I mean, people were just looking on paper. Number one seed, number 27 seed, and she's effectively the world number 30 with some of the women not here. So she's lifted up a couple of seedings. But as we know in women's tennis, it's pretty tight, Lou. The margins are pretty small, even though I think we go into tonight thinking Ash Barty, if she brings everything she's brought across the first six matches, she is head and shoulders above everyone else at the moment and been able to expose the weaknesses of her opponent better than anyone.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Brent. She's handled all types of players. Sorenko, first round, Bronzetti, who's a clay quarter. And then from there on, there are a lot of big hitters. Camilla Giorgi and Pegula and Anisimova. All these players have played very similarly. And not to mention that this match is another big hitter. So she's been able to diffuse those big hitters. And again, just bring in the diverse game style, you know, that she's able to play. And she really, it is all about kind of making her opponent feel very uncomfortable. And again tonight, we talked about this when she played Madison Keys. Get that ball down low, get the ball up high, get the ball to hit with shape and bounce outside the court. And not allow Danielle just to get that strike rate, that ball where she's just got the rhythm and she's dictating. I felt that Iga Swiatek against Danielle was just hitting way too short, and I felt she was able to really manipulate Iga around. That's not going to happen tonight. Ash Barty has been playing with such depth, and she's able to get that ball to shoot off the court. As we talked about it, these courts are playing fast, and they actually get that bounce as well. So Ash has got a little bit of both. I think, you know, I think for Ash, it's got to be her serving game tonight. Again, we talk about that because if that ball lands a little bit short, like Iga's serve was landing short, Danielle Collins was hitting the most unbelievable returns the other night. It was outstanding. She won't be able to do that tonight against Ash. So she won't be able to draw confidence out of one of the best things that she does, and that is her return game.
Hey, Lou, just as an occasion, where do you sort of rate this? I mean, you love sport. I love sport, and I want to put this out to our listeners as well. 0433 98 11 16. You know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, you know, teams or individuals who have achieved, you know, great things. But this is significant because Australian tennis, we've been crying out for a homegrown champion for so long. We've seen, you know, Leighton and others, and obviously Sam and Pat Rafter and others about to win, you know, some of the overseas majors. But we've been crying out for a homegrown Aussie winner. Where do you sort of put this as an occasion compared to, you know, other big sporting events?
No, I think it's incredibly way up there, Brett. I think this is amazing. And, you know, I think back, I guess it was about 10 years ago now, I commentated Ash Barty's win of Junior Wimbledon. And I sat there, and at the end of the match, to see her beat Kristina Mladenovic, the favourite player, who was, I think, 2 or 3 years older, I had tears in my eyes because I just felt this young player was just outstanding, extraordinary, to show the confidence and calm and to do what she did that day. Now, to fast forward 10 years later and think, what has she done? The way she put herself out there, possibly didn't quite meet her own expectations, left the game and then came back with a whole lot more passion and insight of who Ash Barty was. We know she's done a lot of work on herself. I think this is way up there. I would put it, you know, this is an individual sport. This is something that this young lady has dreamed on for a very young kind of age, knowing she won Junior Wimbledon. She's been waiting for this. And I think, well, this is so impressive. We know we haven't had a female Australian winner win since Chris O'Neill, and that was a long time ago. We've been salivating for this one for many years, and I think we were wondering, you know, when are we going to produce someone that is able to compete with the likes of Venus and Serena and those players and the big hitters. We haven't produced a big hitter. We've produced a phenomenal young lady that just can do just about anything out there. Jim Joyce really was living beyond his years by teaching Ash Barty how to play almost like a young boy.
Yes.
Because she plays so different. She's an outlier, and I think this is spectacular for Australian tennis.
Yeah, and Jim will be in the coach's box tonight. And just, I mean, just her personality away from her tennis, Lou, her humility and grace and the way she conducts herself. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to argue that, she might be right now the most popular sports person in this country. I know we've sort of got a tennis lens, you and I, but I think if we did a straw poll, it'd be, I mean, who's more popular right now? Everyone loves Ash Barty.
No, they really do. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter where you go. If you go to the supermarket and talk to people that don't really know anything about tennis, or you go to the mall or whatever, you know, this has really touched all Australians. I think you can't even look at a TV without seeing Ash on some poster or representing, you know, Vegemite or doing something amazing and doing good. We know all the work she's done for the Indigenous community. I mean, she is just an amazing role model. I take my hat off to all the people that have helped her. Her parents, they've obviously done a great job. And you're right, the humility stands out. I travelled with Ash when she was about 14. We went to Mount Gambier to a $25,000 tournament out there. And her tennis intellect, I tell you, was phenomenal. You didn't have to teach Ash Barty much. She was going to teach you a thing or two. And she's certainly teaching a lot of young people in Australia to go to a tennis court and go and live this or learn, you know, this great game of tennis. It's a phenomenal game, and certainly, gosh, hasn't it got her some places in the world?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. French Open, Wimbledon, Australian yes. Open. You feel like she's going to win all four, and then how many? What it all adds up to in the long term is all ahead of us. The most immediate is right now, in the moment, of winning the Australian Open, which she is certainly desperate to do. Just one on the text here, Lou and BP. Winning form is good form. I'm sticking with you here in Abu Dhabi after the semi. Brilliant call. Have a magnificent Saturday. Beers, barbecue and Barty. Bring our girl home. That's our mate Damien, who's been listening to us in Abu Dhabi.
Yes,
he drove off the road the other day.
Oh, g'day, Damien. That's true. He said he was snoozing. Oh, wow. Look, it has brought people together, and there's been so many great conversations. The one thing that you said, the humility of Ash Barty is quite remarkable, isn't she? And just a role model, not only for the WTA, how lucky are they that someone that is a spokesperson just gives so much realness to what she does. There's not much glamour and kind of shine about what she does. It's real and it's honest. And, I think it's really special. We don't always see these kind of qualities with our great athletes, but she certainly has it in spades.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you never really hear her put her foot wrong, does she? And she'd always apologise, I'm sure, if she ever offended, I tell you.
Yes. One here. I was born in 2002. There's never been a more important night of sport in my life. Go, Ash. And one here, Brett. It is Murray. Thank you for the lovely courage coverage you give to the blind and visually impaired that can't follow it on the TV. You've done an awesome job and deserve a medal for your work. You're too kind, Muzza. I know, Muzza. I've met Muzza down there at the cattery, down at Geelong, where the radio is. I know, Murray, a huge part of your life, and that's what we aim to do, just to paint the picture and take you inside the Australian Open. So it's been great to bring it to everyone over the last fortnight. What's the scoreline going to be, Louis, tonight? What are you thinking?
Well, really interesting, because I thought Ash probably wasn't going to start as well as she did against Madison Keys. And I almost thought if Madison comes out and she's playing big and fast, it might take Ash a little minute to get into gear. But I'm actually thinking tonight it's going to be two straight sets. I thought it was going to be three against Madison. But at the speed and the intensity and what Ash has been able to produce, I actually think this is going to be, it'll be like a 6-4, 7-5 kind of match. Much has got to be done by Danielle Collins. Being, you know, at a Grand Slam final for the first time, yeah, I wonder how she's going to handle that. But up until now, she's been pretty amazing. She has had one win against Ash back in Adelaide a while ago. But I think Ash is the newer, improved version from that win. And I think Ash has got it in too.
Fingers crossed. That'll be nice. That's been the theme of her six matches so far. Lou, thank you. You've been a great part of our team. Really appreciate it. And I know you'll sit back and enjoy this one like we will.
Yes, brilliant. Thanks, Brett. And you have a fantastic call with Sammy. What great insight she's going to bring to the call. Fantastic.
Yeah, great addition. Thanks, Lou. Lou Fleming, who's been terrific. Great analysis, who's done it all, played, coached, commentated, knows the Australian tennis scene as good as anyone, and love Lou's passion for the game. We're going to take a break. We'll get to a few of your texts too. 0433 98 11 16. Keep them rolling right throughout the night. We love the interaction. Any questions you want to pose, any observations, thoughts, where you are in the world, how you're feeling about tonight. I'm sure you're finding a TV, a radio, whatever the case may be, to watch this. So make sure you have us on if you have got the visual, and we'll take you right inside tonight with Sam Stosur alongside me. Jordan Kennellis will be in. And I'm just looking at some pictures outside, because we're under the roof here. You wonder what's happening outside. It's been a bit of a gloomy day in Melbourne, but there are people everywhere right across the precinct. Those lucky enough to get a ticket inside RLA, Garden Square, Grand Slam Oval, people want to be here, whether you can get inside or you watch it on the big screen. And you never know, if Ash wins later on and you're at the right place at the right time, you might just get a little glimpse of her walking past with the Daphne Oakhurst trophy. She's still got to earn it, though. We'll take a break. We're coming back. We're building up to the women's singles final here on SEN.
Melbourne Park, this is the 2022 Australian Open, live on SEN.
Thanks to the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au.
Australian Open 2022 women's singles final coming your way in the next 40 minutes or so, as we look out from our bunker onto Rod Laver Arena, where the roof is closed. There'll be, of course, some pre-match entertainment coming up, and it'll be Chris O'Neill, who was in the box with us about an hour ago, the last Australian champion here at the Australian Open back in 1978, who will walk out and, as Chris said, maybe touch the Daphne Oakhurst trophy one last time. She'll bring that out onto court, and then we'll have a couple of live performances, and then we'll welcome in the players, Ash Barty and also Danielle Collins. You can really feel the atmosphere building right across the precinct, and it's magnificent to be here to take it all in. Jordan Kennellis has slipped in because, Jordy, you're going to take the reins in a short amount of time, and Sam Stosur is going to be joining us as well. How are you feeling about tonight?
I've been in and out of nerves. So I was nervous at the start of the day when I was first making my way in. I've been here for a couple of hours already. I was here in the afternoon. I've had nothing else to do, so I thought, why not? Let's come in, soak in the early atmosphere. And it was obviously very quiet during the afternoon, and then just flying around Melbourne Park here and there and everywhere and preparing for tonight. Every time I walk outside, there's more fans and more fans and more fans, and now it's really bubbling outside Rod Laver Arena. So I was nervous at the start of the day. I've been a bit occupied or preoccupied since then, but now that I'm sitting in here and I'm looking at center court and I'm imagining Ash Barty out there, the nerves are building, and you don't want to slip into the negative. You don't want to think, oh, what if though, what if she loses a set, because what could happen then? Yeah, it's going to have nerves just shockwaves throughout Australia, I think, if she drops a set at any point, because can she recover? We know she can, but how will Danielle Collins bounce back, and how will the momentum of the game bounce around? Mm. So, yeah, there's all the what-ifs and the possible permutations, but it's exciting as well. It's a Grand Slam final. It's an Aussie in a Grand Slam final for the first time in a while, so, well, Ash has done it the last couple of years, obviously, but not here on Melbourne, in Melbourne Park, Rod Laver Arena. So, yeah, history tonight.
A bit nervous, says Daryl from Ringwood on the text, after the Fed Cup final. This is France, and been able to handle hometown expectations, but think Ash will have learned from that. It's a good point, Daryl, and I was over there. We covered it, the Fed Cup, and it was, I remember that, so much hype around that, because Australia hadn't won the Fed Cup for a lot of time, and considering Ash was our number one player up against the French, who had a pretty solid team, but it was just execution that day. RACV Arena over there was absolutely full to the brim, but you're right, that's 2 years ago, and Ash has just come a hell of a long way, and she's ironed out those little lapses, periods of errors. I mean, you feel really confident coming here that she's got things under control, and things aren't going to get away from her. So we'll see what challenge Danielle Collins presents. And if it did go to a third set for the first time this whole tournament, how she would deal with that.
Yeah, look, as I said, you feel nervous and you do think of what if. But at the same time, having said all of that, BP, and it's a good point you raise, and Daryl off the text as well, the last 2 years of Ash's career, she's worked on those little things. She's worked on the mental game. She's worked on just, steeling herself, just, really fortifying her mind out on the court and all those things that, that can go wrong for a tennis player. Well, Ashes reduced those potential what ifs and those potential banana peels out there, and she's become more of a steely player. She's become more of a solid player out there, and you feel secure with Ash when you watch her. That mightn't have been the case a couple of years ago, but now when you see her out there, you go, she's got it. We know she's got it. And we know how strong she is mentally. We know how unperturbed she is out there on the court. Nothing much rattles her, and every time you watch her, every new time you watch her, there's something, it's less and less. Whatever could rattle her, the percentage decreases, so she's almost unflappable out there. In a slam final, though, the intensity is heightened, so things become a lot more tense.
Indeed. So that's ahead of us. We've got a couple of moments here before we break, and you welcome in Sam. And I've been here all day doing these junior finals, so magnificent.
I thought I got here early. You've been here since the morning, BP.
So Petra Marchenko, the number one seed, won the girls. So she's going to be one to certainly look out for, because anyone who wins those junior slams, generally goes on to have an impact in the pros. And then the most extraordinary match between the top seed, Bruno Kusahara, Brazilian-born, who has immigrated to the States. The family moved there when he was one, Japanese heritage. It was an unbelievable battle with Jakub Mencik, the Czech Republic player, who is the fourth seed, 3 hours and 43 minutes, 7-5. And I had to get up and do the presentation. And it's the first time. I had about 10 different people running around. Oh, I think we're going to get him out in the wheelchair. He had to go off the court in the wheelchair. Body had totally seized up, cramping. He played out the match. They had some unbelievable rallies. And I don't know if that's the longest boys' final. We were trying to chase that up. But that's the first time I can ever remember a finalist not been able to come out and actually get their trophy. So, yeah, two young guys have got very bright futures.
Had shades of Rafa and was it Rafa and Novak here?
Yes.
When they had to have the chairs brought out for them to sit down on the on the presentation. I caught a bit of that match, actually. I saw the second set, and Mencik, the Czech player, looks a good type. He's tall. He's got a good body shape.
Yep.
You always have that slight advantage already when you're tall. We see how many tall players dominate the tour at the moment. Not that small players can't, and Kusahara is the smaller of the two, and he obviously won. But, yeah, Mencik and Kusahara from the Czech Republic in the United States, respectively. Just jot those names down, tennis fans.
Indeed, and Barbora Krejcikova was actually sitting there watching the whole match with her coach, of course, who will play in the women's doubles final come tomorrow, and French Open champion last year. So Czech tennis, it's just always been strong, hasn't it? Just players through the year is just filing through. They've had good team success, particularly in the Fed Cup. And they keep finding very good talent.
I was actually looking at the 1978 Oz Open women's draw when Chris O'Neill won it. And even in that era of tennis, there wasn't too much of a European invasion yet. It was still Australians and Americans, basically. The Europeans didn't really come until, I guess, the 80s, I suppose, and then the huge influx through the 90s. But there was still a Czech player in there, the number three seed. So they've just been around forever. And, whenever you look through the top 100, especially the women's game, more so than the men's, it feels like, so many high-quality women's players on the women's side. You think of just the last couple of years of Krejcikova now, Petra Kvitova, Karolina Pliskova recently, Barbora Strizova, going back another sort of generation. They've just been around forever. So, yeah, and I was sitting in the radio room upstairs when the boys' final was on, and there was, I think, the Czech correspondent is sitting the row over
to me.
I know
who that man is.
Yes.
Yeah. I sit next to him at the US Open. He goes to all the slams. I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And he does a few crosses back to the motherland every so often, but he actually put the headset on and started commentating the final in the room. And it's normally pretty quiet in there apart from the odd, radio cross that pops up here or there from the different radio stations. But he sat there and he commentated the match of these two, however old they were, 17-year-old, 16-year-old kids.
That reminds me of the Austrian commentator. The first year I went to Wimbledon, very strict on the rules, Wimbledon, how many minutes per hour you're allowed to do. And Jürgen Meltzer was having a run that year, the former world number eight, and he just broke all rules and ripped into full-on commentary. All these people who are, going by the book, we better take this guy out anyway. Jürgen got knocked out. He packed his stuff up and he left. And that was it. Last time we saw him. So he thought, I'm going out with a bang. I don't know if he ever came back to cover more Wimbledons. We'll take a break. Joining on the other side with Sam Stoser, who's going to be coming up in the box to give us her great insights tonight. Knows Ash Barty better than us and can give us a real feel of how Ash might be feeling tonight. Danielle Collins, her opponent. It is the calm before the storm, the pre-match entertainment to come. Chris O'Neill, the 1978 champion, will come out and bring the Daphne Akers Trophy into the middle of Rod Laver Arena. Keep your texts coming as well, 0433 98 11 16, right throughout the night. Let us know where you are, your thoughts. You can interact with us. Any questions you've got for Sam throughout the night as well, they're very welcome. 0433 98 11 16. A break. Back with more here from Melbourne Park.
Live on SEM.
Thanks to the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au.
Welcome back to SEN's coverage of the Australian Open here from Melbourne Park. It is women's finals night, brought to you by the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Despair not, Brett Phillips will be back with you in a few moments from now. He's just fulfilling his on-court duties as the MC at Rod Laver Arena, but he'll be back with you for the call of the match. I'm filling in for the meantime, Jordan Canellas with you. Sam Stoes is about to jump in the chair, and she'll be our special comments experts tonight on our coverage here on SEN. Women's finals night brought to you by O'Brien Real Estate. Request an appraisal with O'Brien to win 10 grand. And speaking of that woman, Sam Stoza is here with us in the bunker. Sam, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
How are you feeling ahead of the final?
A little bit nervous, actually. Yeah. Yeah, I think I don't normally get nervous watching matches, but obviously when it means a little bit more to you, then it kind of comes through. But yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens tonight. Obviously everyone's going to be willing Ash on as much as we can, but I think it's going to be a really good match.
Has it been something you've been ruminating on throughout the day, or has it just hit you now as you've walked into Melbourne Park? Has it been in the back of the mind? How long?
Oh, look, I've spoken a little bit about this match, so it's always been kind of front and centre, but I think, it's a Grand Slam final. It can go either way. But I think having it here at home in Australia, it's got that extra little bit of element of excitement, obviously, for everyone here. So a bit different to waking up in the middle of the night and watching it when, she won the French and Wimbledon. So it's prime time and the crowd's ready, and let's hope that she is too.
What happens throughout the day? So being a champion yourself back in the US Open 2011, throughout the day, how do you pass the time? How do you try and suppress the butterflies if they do start to creep in? How do you just occupy yourself for those hours leading into the match?
I think the days can sometimes go pretty quick by the time you do your thing in the morning, have breakfast, depending on what you'd kind of like to do as far as prep goes. Do you do a little bit of, mobility or stretching or something in the morning? And then she was probably out here, I'd say, around 2 or 3 o'clock this afternoon, getting ready for a warm-up. I think she was hitting actually around 6 o'clock. So, doing all the same routines I'm sure she's done for every night match that she's had here. If it was me, that's exactly what I'd be doing. They've all worked so far. So you just do, okay, what do I do at 4 o'clock that day? What do I do at 5 o'clock? What do I do at 6? And get ready for tonight.
Is it more beneficial to sleep in a little bit because, the night could be long? It's a night match, so you don't want to wake up too early and tire yourself out quickly. Is it sort of natural for tennis players to have a bit of a lie-in?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. There's certainly no urgency in the morning, that's for sure. So I don't know if Ash is a sleep-in type person, but, you can kind of cruise in the morning time and just, try and keep things as normal as possible. And, got a few butterflies probably. You're probably just trying to, make sure you're eating enough food and getting everything down that you need to. And, and then obviously as the day goes on, that's where you really got to start thinking about things. But, I don't think you don't want to be waking up thinking about, first point of the match, what am I going to do? Yeah. You need to relax a little bit.
Yeah, it's way too intense a way to wake up in the morning. Ash better than any of us do. She does strike me as the kind of person who probably likes to be an early riser. Would I be right?
Yeah, well, especially being from Queensland too, whether you like it or not, you are, because Queensland you cannot sleep in.
Let's chat about yourself first, Sam. So this was your last Oz Open as a singles player. Why was now, do you think, the right time for you to retire, at least from the singles circuit?
I just felt like the last couple of years have been pretty tough, obviously with the travel, the obvious reasons that everyone's been going through. But I think, over the last couple of years, I wasn't winning as many singles matches as what I'd liked. And I was still training as much as what I needed to and was able to, and playing fantastic in practice. I was, you know, barely losing practice sets against some of the best players in the world and just couldn't quite translate it into the matches, and then started having some more doubles success in the last couple of years and really, really enjoyed my time on court with that. And yeah, kind of the end of last year after the US Open, I thought, oh, that might well be my last singles match. And then over the last couple of months, thought, oh, maybe I would like to play one more AO, and I'm obviously so grateful for the decision that I made to give it one last one, and I always wanted to finish here at home in Australia, so I guess to kind of put myself on the line again for that, I'm glad that I you know, had the guts to do that, and then obviously grateful for the opportunity with the wild card. Without that, I wouldn't have been able to do that at all, so it all worked out great. I was so happy with the way that I was able to play, get through a match, lose to the number 10 seed, and yeah, have my, I guess, my moment here in Australia where I could go out there and enjoy it and yeah, kind of say thank you.
But so the doubles is still going on though? You'll still do that for the rest of this year at least?
Yep. Still planning on playing doubles this year. So it'll be not a full schedule like I've been used to over my career, but probably another 10 events or so for the rest of the year, and play the slams and some lead up events with my usual partner, Zhang Shui. And yeah, hopefully we can kind of keep going and build on the momentum that we got from winning the US Open last year.
So does limiting your yearly calendar, taking away the singles now and just focusing on doubles, what extra liberties does that afford you doing the travel 12 months a year?
Well, a little bit more time at home, a bit more time with my daughter, and yeah, can kind of, I guess, have a bit more of a life at home and you know, I guess do things like this as well. That's nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously you still got to train. You still got to do things that you're always used to doing as a player. You can't just rock up to matches and think it's going to fall in your lap without training. So I'll be getting back into the training in a week or so and putting everything I can into it. And yeah, hopefully it all goes well, but it will certainly be a little bit different way to, I guess, go about a year. But yeah, waking up every single day and you know, pounding your body is getting tougher and tougher. So if I only need to do that, you know, on a bit more of a limited time, then I'm pretty grateful for that.
But the body's still fit though, otherwise? Like, you're still feeling as good as you were in the last couple of years?
Yeah, pretty good. There's been quite a few niggles in the last couple of years, and a couple more have crept up on me again after this week. But, you know, I've been pretty fortunate. I've only had a couple of things that have kept me out for months, you know, on end throughout my whole career. So I think as it whatever it is, 20 years or whatever, that's pretty good going. So, but there's always something. You never go on court feeling, you know, completely 100%. There's always something hurting. So, yeah, as long as you can stay on top of those and not let them, you know, grow into something bigger, then I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, that's almost the lie of an athlete, isn't it? Is you go out looking like you're 100%, but underneath everyone's got something, isn't it?
Yeah, even this week I was like, oh God, my Achilles is pretty sore today, but I'm going to run for that ball and make it look like it's great. But yeah, it takes its toll. I mean, I think everyone goes through that, and if you don't have to, then you know, that's just I think you're a very lucky person.
So what do you feel like you've gotten out of tennis in the last few years? The back end now of your career, the last few years of your singles stint as well. What did you take away from it?
I think that, one, I've been able to have, you know, amazing longevity, and somehow still be able to, you know, have success at big tournaments, at Grand Slams. And I, you know, I couldn't believe we won the US Open last year, 16 years after I won my first US Open. So, you know, that's not something I ever had imagined. So to still be going out on court, one, enjoying it as much as what I am, you know, having success always helps with that, and being able to continue on, I think it's just been, it's probably a bit more enjoyable when you know, you're kind of coming towards the end, you realize how much you do enjoy it, and that becomes the main focus. So yeah, I think it, every part of your career has its different phases and elements of, you know, pressures and things that you're successful at, not successful at, but I think towards the end you start really appreciating, you know, everything that it's got to offer.
Yeah, so you feel satisfied?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I achieved more than, you know, I achieved really what I wanted to, which I can't believe that, and more than what I really probably deep down thought was possible. So yeah, I feel really good about walking away from that part of my tennis now, but yeah, I'm very, very happy with my career.
Aside from the obvious, the 2011 US Open, what's the most joyous memory you have thinking back on your career so far?
Well, I mean, I think there's, if you're talking about, you know, tournament wins, they obviously go without saying lifting the trophy at the end of the week is always the highlight because it doesn't happen very often for many players. So if we could all be, you know, Roger and Serena, then it'd be incredible. So you got to really enjoy those moments where it all comes off. But there's certainly a bunch of matches that, you know, individual matches in different places where I can look back and think, yeah, I'm really happy with that win against Hennen at the French Open or, you know, this player here or whatever it is. And you have maybe five or six moments in your career where you just play completely lights out and you cannot miss a thing. And, you know, I've had a few of those times. So I remember those and think, wow, that was a really good day.
So with still more matches to come on the doubles circuit, are you already starting to think about the future now and what comes after that?
Yeah, I mean, I've already been thinking about that for a few years anyway. I think I had a coach a few years ago, Josh Eagle, who, even though I wasn't thinking about being retired or anything, we had lots of conversations about life after tennis, and he was like, trust me, I've been around tennis long enough and been through it myself, and his wife, where you stop and you don't want to have to then start thinking of things that you want to do. So even the last few years I've been trying to get into some commentary, doing this tonight. I'd love to get into some sort of mentoring and coaching with the younger girls and really stay in the sport. I've done it for too long and enjoyed it and loved it too much just to kind of zip up my bag for the last time and walk away forever. So I'd still love to be involved in the sport in some way, for sure.
How much commentary have you done?
Oh, bits and pieces over the years. Yeah. This is my first one this year, so okay. But I'm looking forward to
debut.
It. Yeah, if you're going to jump in the deep end, why not?
Excellent. We're looking forward to hearing you tonight, Sam. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back on the other side, and as we tick closer towards the start of this women's singles final, we'll start to preview the match on the other side of this. SEN's coverage of the Australian Open brought to you by the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6 and for McDonald's. Try the Aussie Angus Burger at Macca's today. Jordan Canellis and Sam Stoser with you in the Rod Laver Arena Bunker, coming back after this.
Park. This is the 2022 Australian Open live on SEN.
Thanks to the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. It's as silent as the critics. Find out more at kia.com/au.
Welcome back to SEN's coverage of the Australian Open. Thanks to Kia for the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6 here at Rod Laver Arena. Inside the arena, the lights are low. The blue lights are being pointed at the crowd, so it's illuminating the chairs, but the court is dark and it's all very eerie and suspenseful as we get closer towards the start of the women's singles final between Ash Barty, the world number one, and the number 27 seed from the United States, Danielle Collins. Jordan Canellis and Sam Stoser with you in the bunker. Brett Phillips will be leading the coverage when he returns from his on-court duties in a few minutes' time. We're waiting for the competitors to make their way out onto the court in a few minutes. All cameras were pointed to the Daphne Akhurst Memorial Cup a few moments ago, as it sits glistening in one corner of Rod Laver Arena. Sam, let's talk about this match. Let's talk about Ash first. It's what everyone wants to hear about. When did you first meet Ash Barty?
Oh, I first met Ash, she was maybe 11 or 12 or so up in Brizzy. I remember she was already using natural gut string, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that is unheard of. And but yet somebody obviously of her talent at that age could actually use a string like that. So you knew that there was something pretty special in the making.
So what's the difference between that and what a junior would normally use?
One, it's a lot more expensive and you don't just want to put it in your racket for the sake of it. So, but yeah, it creates a lot more feel off your strings, doesn't last as long. So it's more expensive to get and it also doesn't last as long. So you've got to have more restrings, whereas, you know, typically you just use a straight kind of poly string that you can sit in your racket for 2 weeks and, you know, not worry, but gets a bit loose, but you're like, ah, it's fine. I'm 11 years old. It doesn't matter. but no, I think right from a very early age, she was probably a bit more in tune with that side of things.
The lights are completely turned off now inside Rod Laver Arena. It's pitch black. All the phone lights, the LED lights in the back of the mobile phones are starting to flicker on around the stadium. And we get closer and closer now. So what was Ash doing at that time? What were you there for when she was 11?
Oh, we were just practicing at the same centre for the first time. I went up to Brizzy and that's where she was, and I knew her coach and just kind of met her, chatted. It was kind of like, oh, here's a youngster. I'd been playing a little bit, and we didn't I don't think we practiced or anything together at that point in time. But yeah, it was just a kind of a say good day and see what was, you know, the future of tennis.
Did you, what were your first memories when she first went pro? So she would have been what? She would have been a teenager?
Yeah, I mean, she won Wimbledon, I think, 14 years old in the juniors, which is remarkable. And then my first real time, I guess, spending time with her and seeing her play was the first time she was in the Fed Cup team. And she played her singles matches. She was very young and played them, won them. Was, you know, really impressive. It was a really weird weekend that weekend where we were playing in Switzerland. It was raining. We ended up playing on two courts, which you never do at Fed Cup. It's always on one court. The whole team watches everyone and da-da-da. We were on two courts. We were split. And I remember I was still playing and she'd already walked off and I think was coming up to watch my match. And I thought, geez, Ash finished quickly. That was good. But, yeah, it was that was a real eye-opener to see, okay, this kid really is really an experience, but taking this moment on like she's done it all before.
Was it different to when other young players come through? Because when you see a talented young tennis player, you notice them, but sometimes you notice some more than others. Was Ash one that stood out above the rest, or was it like, okay, the talent's there, but when she works on it and gets, you know, works on these little things, then she'll be there, or was it just instant?
I think it seemed pretty instant from all reports. Like, I didn't watch Ash practicing every day when she was a junior or anything like that. But,
sure.
I mean, seeing her play from a young age, I mean, she had every shot already. She could already hit a slice backhand. She could hit, you know, a top spin kick serve. You know, she could hit everything. And, her weapons have just kept growing and growing and growing as those years have gone on. But it's not like even at that young age she couldn't do something. And I think that's very unusual that, you know, someone that young has already got kind of all the elements there. You just got to keep growing them and making them better and better. It's not like you've got to learn a new skill at 19 years of age.
What do you remember around the time when she left tennis to go to cricket?
I think, oh, geez, you sure you want to do that? Because, you know, tennis is a pretty good sport. But, yeah, I think first a little bit surprised. But then on the flip side, it was like, well, you know what, if you're not enjoying it and you don't want to do it anymore, you don't have to. This is her life. This is her choice. She can choose what she wants to do, and everyone else can have their opinions about it. But at the end of the day, if she doesn't want to do it, she doesn't. And, you know, I think could quite possibly have been the best decision she ever made was to step away. She had her break. She played cricket, realised that she did want to play again, and now look what's happened.
Was there a feeling of despair almost among the tennis community that she left?
Oh, I think around her friend, like, Casey Delacroix and really close friends on tour and, you know, I guess the tennis in general in Australia thought, oh, we've kind of lost a protege here and someone who could be a real champion. So for sure people would have been disappointed and upset and even more so why I think making that decision's even, you know, more remarkable for someone to not then take that weight of everything and just do it for the hell of it. She stuck to her guns, made the decision she made, and, you know, it has absolutely all paid off as best as you could ever have hoped for.
So she came back and she had a lot of success in the doubles initially. So her and Casey, her and you at times as well. Mm-hmm. Do you think the doubles, having that foundation as a doubles player, how much did that elevate then her singles game when she focused more on the singles a few years later?
Yeah, I think that can only have helped her. You know, winning doubles titles, playing in Grand Slam finals, those are experiences no matter what format of the game. You can't buy that experience. It's so different to going out there and practicing again, you know, with no crowd or anything. There's always something on the line. And even though she was always playing singles at those moments, being able to work on her skills, come forward, you know, you're hitting more volleys and doubles and just feeling those emotions going through those events, it's only got an upside. And especially at a young age, you don't have to worry about being tired or, you know, pulling up the next day or anything like that. You can do that. So I think it's the best thing for a player is to play doubles right from the start.
0433 98 11 16. If you have any questions for Sam off the text line, send those through throughout the course of the evening. That's 0433 98 11 16. To the recent times now, and the most recent last three or so years when she's elevated her game now, Ash Barty, and she's been at the top of the women's game for the last couple of years. It felt like she was always there, and she made a slow kind of climb up to the, oh, a steady climb, I should say, not slow, a steady climb up into the top 30 and the top 20 in the world, and then she just clicked and went like that, and then she's at the top of the tree and winning slams. What was that? Do you know what that flick was when she went from being a good player to being a world beater?
Well, I mean, it really didn't happen. That didn't take that long. Like, even from when she began playing again, I remember seeing her play at Wimbledon. She maybe won one of the Challenger tournaments before Wimbledon straight away. And you're like, okay, that's impressive. And then it was only a few years later she was holding the Grand Slam title at the French Open. So it certainly was a steady climb, but I think once she kind of made that click and realised that she can beat the best players in the world, absolutely go, you know, toe-to-toe with them on any given day. You're going to win some, you're going to lose some. You can't win every single match, but had that belief that she can absolutely do this, and then you win your first Grand Slam. So that belief then turns into, you know, knowing that you've got the goods and you can do it. You know exactly what it takes. She's just kind of gone up a level, up a level, up a level, and now this tournament in particular, she's kind of just dominated everyone and has barely been troubled, which is, you know, shouldn't happen like that. It just seems too easy.
Why does her game work? How does this game work? Because you'd think, wouldn't power and pace be the way to go, isn't it? You know, you look at successful players on the women's tour. I mean, Serena Williams has been the dominant force on the women's tour, and she's got pace and power and a big serve, and Ash doesn't necessarily have all of that. She has it in parts, and she can use it when she wants. As we see Chris O'Neill coming out, standing alongside the Daphne Akhurst trophy. They just had a performance which you might have heard in the background before on Rod Laver Arena, and now the trophy is being presented by the last Aussie winner of it. Here in Melbourne, I was going to say Melbourne Park, but I was out at Kooyong back in 1978. And Chris O'Neill is walking it to the centre of the court in a lovely pre-match ceremony. Ash Barty and Danielle Collins are still awaiting down in the bowels of Rod Laver Arena. But now the Daphne Akhurst Cup sits in the middle of Rod Laver with all the spotlights shining down on it and the seats filling quickly inside centre court. What a sight in tennis. That's what's on offer tonight. The cup sitting right on top of the net. So the quality in the game of Ash Barty, why does it work?
She's just got so many different elements to it. It doesn't look like she hits the ball that hard, but believe me, her forehand's got some pace on it. It is quick, and she sets it up so well with her slice backhand to use her weapons. She's got a really good serve, a big serve, actually, for someone of her height. She's got good technique. I think that's why it looks so effortless. But, it is coming at a pace that, you know, not watching, you know, on TV that you can always pick up on.
We might actually take some of this national anthem because I want to hear the roar at the end and honour our country.
Gifts of beauty rich and rare. In history's page, let every stage advance Australia fair. In joyful strains, then let us sing, advance Australia
fair. Emma Ricks, with the honours of singing the Australian National Anthem, stood right in front of the Daphne Akhurst Memorial Cup. And our competitors will be out in a few minutes from now on Rod Laver Arena. Jordan Canellis and Sam Stones are with you to start tonight's broadcast. Brett Phillips will be with us shortly. That might have been his voice you can hear in the background, actually, announcing the order of proceedings out on Rod Laver Arena. SEN's coverage of the Australian Open brought to you by Kia, the super fast charging all-electric Kia EV6. Sam will be our special comments analyst throughout the course of the night. So Ash Barty and Danielle Collins going head-to-head tonight for the fifth time in their career. Ash has the 3-1 head-to-head record, and she comes into this tournament as the number one seed. Danielle Collins is the world number 27. This will be the fourth American now in a row that Ash will have played after Amanda Anisimova, Jessica Pegula and Madison Keys on the way to the final. Danielle Collins sweeping aside Iga Swiatek in the semi-finals a few nights ago to make this stage. Previously, Danielle Collins, it's been a short career for Danielle Collins. She is in her sort of early to mid-20s. She's 3 years older than Ash Barty at the moment, so she's, I'm trying to do the math here, because doesn't have their age on the sheet of paper we're given, so mathematics would make her something years old. She's mid-20s anyway, Danielle Collins. But the point I'm making is she was at college for a long time, so she went through the NCAA system for a few years, which delayed, I guess, the start of her professional career. So she's been a late bloomer on the scene in women's tennis, but she made the semi-finals of the Australian Open a couple of years ago in what was her debut Oz Open appearance. And now 2 years later, after battling endometriosis, she's made the return back, and I mean, she's been around the tour still, but just has been hampered by this medical condition. She's made the full recovery now. She opted to get surgery to help the condition, and here she is in her first slam final. We'll take a break here on SEN's coverage of the Oz Open. We'll get Sam Stoza, her thoughts on Danielle Collins and the head-to-head matchup on the other side of this. SEN's coverage of the Oz Open Women's Singles Final, brought to you by Kia and for McDonald's.
From Melbourne Park, this is the 2022 Australian Open, live on SEN.
Thanks to the super-fast charging all-electric Kia EV6.
Welcome back to SEN's coverage of the Australian Open here, brought to you by McDonald's. Try the Aussie Angus Burger at Macca's today. The lights are on. Is the roof open? I'm trying to see. I can't quite see from here because we're right underneath. Yes, it is, actually. It's been opened back up, so the roof will be open here for tonight's match on Rod Laver Arena. Ash Barty, we're seeing pictures of her down in the tunnels of Rod Laver Arena, and she'll be walking one in front of the other with Danielle Collins up the Walk of Champions in just a few moments from now. Jordan Canellas here with you, kicking off the coverage tonight. Brett Phillips will take you through the rest of the women's singles match from the first set onwards. And we'll have the men's doubles final as well later on. So as Billy off the tech says, I feel very nervous tonight. Just hope Ash can do it. And the doubles is a great match. At least an Aussie somewhere is going to be a winner. That will be the case in the men's doubles tonight. But we're hoping for two tonight. We'll get one. Let's make it two as well in this first match, the women's singles final. We've spoken about Ash Barty, Sam, but there are two competitors out there. Danielle Collins has been an absolute menace for her opponents throughout the course of this Australian Open. She's a brutaliser out there. It's tough to get past her. She's a mental warrior as well. So, mentally, it's hard to overcome that hurdle, let alone her actual tennis. What challenge does she pose? What threat does she pose to Ash Barty tonight?
I think first and foremost, she's an absolute competitor. She's a fighter. She's going to, give her come-ons and fist pumps to the crowd, even though she knows they're not really going to be for her tonight. But so she's not going to lay down and let Ash have this. She's going to fight to the very end. And then from a playing standpoint, she's got an incredibly good backhand. Her best shot is her backhand cross court, which is going into Ash's weaker side of her backhand. So I think we're going to see the tactics from Ash, trying to get as many forehands as possible, probably playing into Collins's forehand more, and Collins is going to try and do exactly the opposite, play into Ash's backhand more and get her off the court with her backhand cross court. So I think it's going to be a really good matchup. I think they have played four times before. Ash actually lost the last time that they played against each other in Adelaide last year. But, Ash has got the experience of playing in a Grand Slam final before and winning them, whereas Collins doesn't have that. But, yeah, she's going to bring some big tennis tonight, and I think it's going to be a great match.
28 years old, Danielle Collins. She does have deep tournament runs in her, however, just the once at the Oz Open before. Had she made it into the second week, that was in her debut year in 2019. When she made it to the semi-finals, losing ultimately to Petra Kvitova, but beats Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, Angelique Kerber, Caroline Garcia along the way as well. So she's got that she can still fall back on.
Yeah, she's got experience of beating good players and top players. She's won a couple of titles last year. She knows what it takes, even going through college tennis in America, that is high intensity tennis, and they do anything to win there. So she knows exactly what it takes.